Good morning. This is Leatherneck Magazine's Andrew Lubin. Today we're talking with Colonel Austin Renforth, Commanding Officer of RCT-7, headquartered at Camp Leatherneck in Holland Province. Colonel, thanks for taking the time this morning.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Colonel, no news is good news out of Afghanistan, and Helmand Province doesn't make the news at all. What's happening with RCT-7? What's happening on the ground in Helmand Province?
Well, I tell you, there is good news coming out of Helmand Province. What we're talking about now is really phasing out the regimental combat team, and first time, in quite a few years that we will no longer have a regiment here. It's really because of the ability of the Afghan National Security Forces. Them enabling the drawdown of the ISAF forces because of their readiness. That's really what's happening, because they're taking the lead for security in Helmand Province, which allows us to draw back and retrograde out of here.
What are the metrics you're using nowadays to show success? Reduction in ticks, more kids in school? What are the numbers that people use?
Well, I think all the above. I mean, and certainly you can say there's more security around all the district centers. I think all the district centers essentially feel pretty good about the security they have. They just ask for some fundamental things. I think they ask for land and water rights, health and education, and really justice, be it formal or informal justice. I think they're starting to receive that, from the ANSAF. And once they get that, that's their that lends them to have confidence in Jaroa. So that's when you have security, you have more kids in school, you have better health and education across the board. And I think we're seeing that in all the districts in Helmand Province. I mean, really, it's come a long way. I've been here close to 11 months now, and it's unbelievable the change, because I've been studying this problem for a long time. And really, we bear the fruit of all the regiments that have come before us. So I talked to all those guys and seen what they've seen, and if it wasn't for their efforts, we certainly wouldn't be in a position now to be able to lift off out here in Afghanistan.
That, when I was there last in 2011, there for 4 months, was with Lieutenant Colonel Sean Reardon from 1-3. They had about 170 little little cops up and down the Helmand River Valley. Are they still there? Are you pulling the Marines back into the big
No, area? And what we've done is, as the ANSAF have developed and been able to take over the battle space, we've come back into some of the larger cops throughout the district centers. And so the smaller ones, the little, squad size where we were littered throughout the area of operations, that no longer happens now. So even the larger ones have gone away. So what we've done is we brought those in. We would do what we call patrol to advise. Level two advising is what we called it. And essentially what we did over the last 11 months is fade to black. As we were on top of them, as they've grown in capability and capacity, we started phasing back and lighter touches over time. And then no longer the need to have these cops and fobs out all over the battle space. So all the way from down in our southernmost district, all the way up to the northernmost, we've shut down large amounts of cops and fobs.
So the Afghan forces, then the ANA and ANP and Afghan local police, they are that good then?
Well, certainly they've made a ton of progress, is what it is. I think they're good enough to have an overmatch over the Taliban. That's certainly how good they are. Across the board in every district center, they enjoy an overmatch against the insurgency. So that makes them good. And they don't have to be great. They just have to be better than the Taliban. And that's all we're asking for, and they certainly are at this point. So once they've shown that capacity to really sustain themselves over time, I mean, then we got it. And then that's all the conditions set for liftoff right there.
Okay. Yeah, because once they show that, then the Afghan people, at least my experience, and it has been that once the Afghan people see that, they can't rise up and support their Afghan forces quickly enough.
Well, and that's right. And what it is you want an ANSAF capable of protecting the population and securing a legitimate Afghan government. And when you have that, those people, they want to side with the winner, and that's who they're going with, the ANSAF.
Okay. There was a book that came out recently, I don't know if you've seen it, War Comes to Grand Tier, written by Colonel Reardon's political officer, Carter Malkasian. He talks about how they've had 20 years, 30 years of war, and the Afghan people really are just tired of it and just want to be left alone. Do you see that now, or do you see them trying to build a more vibrant home in province?
Well, I haven't read the book. Certainly know the authors well, actually. I'm getting a feeling, just from firsthand knowledge and talking to the locals myself, that they are tired of war, and any human war. They certainly have gotten used to it, and they deal with it, but they're tired of it. They're tired of raising their kids in this kind of environment, and they just want a legitimate government to work, and that's what they want. And I think what will be a big deal is us to be able to get to this position that we're going to have, that we're postured to have a legitimate election season next year. And I think that'll really see where we're going from there.
Colonel, the biggest holdup, seemingly, has been a lack of Jiroa presence in Helmand Province, and probably the others, but we're Helmand specific here today. Do you see Jiroa sending out the teachers, sending out facilities, sending out the Minister of Education and the rest to actually support what the district governor and the Marines are doing?
Well, I think we're at the edge of the empire here of Afghanistan. And certainly they're starting in the center and the major urban centers, and they're spreading out. But I have seen the last 11 months that we have gotten attention, a lot more attention than's been previously given out here. So it's slow in coming, but it is coming. Okay, certainly you have to prioritize your districts across all of Afghanistan. And certainly I wouldn't prioritize Helmand Province as being the number one district, but it has to be paid attention to because the insurgency is coming through here. And once you put a little bit of that in there, governance, I think they'll, and they see the benefit of it, I think it'll be good. Here's a scenario I use all the time with my Marines. I'm from West Virginia. Okay, not a ton of Marines from West Virginia, but, I got a big family heritage back in West Virginia. Well, back in the day, my relatives up in the hills, they weren't liking any government either. So a lot of people are coming up there and saying, hey, we got this thing called government we want to give you, and we're going to help you guys out in West Virginia. Well, they would just shoot back at them. They don't want any of that. Well, that doesn't mean they were insurgents. They just weren't people that wanted to be messed with. They weren't people that wanted their lifestyle changed. So a lot of people in Helmand Province are used to living like this. And they don't understand when they're actually getting good government support what it means. And over time, that's just going to have to be overcome. And it's very similar to some of the places we have back in the United States, Georgia, West Virginia, some of those places where they said, hey, here we are, government. Hell, there's been wars fought over that. Doesn't mean they're insurgency, though.
Well, speaking of Marines in West Virginia, I think the best phrase I ever heard about counterinsurgency came from I think he's picked up a star now, is General Dale Alford, where he says, it's real simple. Got to make them choose us. And that's really Afghanistan in a nutshell.
Well, yeah, and Dale is actually a very close friend of mine. And I'll correct that. He's from Georgia. So that's why I actually threw Georgia in there, because he's more country than I am. So, Dale's actually from Georgia. And a very good friend of mine. And he and I have talked counterinsurgency, a lot the last 10 years. And we're in a basic agreement. I agree. You have to make them choose you. And they'll go with the winner, like I said, in the dominant tribe. And that's something they're going to get something back out of. They don't mind being taxed if they can see something for their taxes.
Okay. Fair enough. Colonel, you mentioned earlier, Colonel, about rule of law and justice and all, which is obviously important in from both a local and a Jiroa level. ANP has been a big issue in the news in the United States the last 10 years. ANP, you understand, can't be shaking down the locals. The rule of law actually means something other than a way to extort money.
Well, when I say justice, and it's not necessarily tied to rule of law necessarily, I think the people of Helmand Province just want justice, whether it's formal or informal justice. And they want consistent justice. If it's a head hookup or lead tribal elder that is the guy that decides justice, then they're okay with that, as long as it's consistent across the board. So that's what's going on out here. It might be a little more formalized as you get in the larger urban centers in Kabul and all those areas, but out here, They're just looking for justice, period. Does that make sense to you?
Makes sense. I mean, because to be honest with you, that makes more sense because there is, there's an ultimate right and wrong, and you know when you see it, and a civilization like that really does also.
Yeah, they certainly do, and they do want justice for sure.
So the pullout's still scheduled for 2014. You see things considering here. I mean, the newspapers back here talk about how you have the Taliban sitting waiting at the borders for the Marines and that ice up to pull out. Do you see that? Or do you think that the ANSS is strong enough now to that they know what they're doing without handholding?
Well, certainly, as far as shoot, move, and communicate. The ANSAF is certainly enjoying overmatch over the insurgency. They got it. I think really what they need to work on and what we can help them for even a longer period of time is the institutional logistics across the board, sustaining and maintaining your equipment, gear, accountability, things of that nature. And I think that's what's going to be their Achilles heel over time unless they can somehow correct that. You know, but as far as just your basic infantryman skills and out-dueling the enemy, that's just a no-brainer, and they can do that anytime, all day. It's just the institutional logistics, really.
Okay. Back when I was there last in 2011, they were spinning up the Afghan local police, especially
right.
Around Marja. How are they doing now? They some of them.
I think they're doing great. Yeah, I tell you, Marja is really doing wonderful. It's really, you know, it's funny because I'm sure it's hard for you to imagine that since you were here back in 2011. But they've really understood the layered security concept we're looking at, where we got the districts, you know, really the precincts within the districts that the ALP are taking care of because they're from there. They know the area. Then on the outside is where you have the Army, the ANA. And they really understand the layered security concept down there. And you know, like in other places, what we have is more integrated security with all the ANSAP pillars. They come together to attack a problem. But really, Marja is sort of a model right now on how to do that layered security.
Well, you never think that back in 2010. Sir, is Mirza still
Yeah, it's incredible.
Is Mirza still have the Afghan local police in Marja? Remember, he's got the girls' school running on his own property.
Right down in Marja, you're talking about?
Correct, yes, sir.
Yeah, the girls' school's flourishing. I mean, it's really, you know, knock on wood here, but it's sort of been the model as of late. And it should have been, because we certainly put our time and effort, it was the main effort for the longest time, and that's where, you know, the most fruit has borne.
And again, it goes back to the concept of choose us. Eventually, you know, they, in Marja, they did. That makes all the difference in the world.
It sure does.
Colonel, if you've got the Marines pulling back from the countryside, everybody's back on the big bases, what sure would they not just sit around there going to chow and playing poker? What do you got them doing now?
Well, no, we still are in the defense. So we have some larger FOBs, and it's larger, it's all relative. It's larger than those squad-sized FOBs that you saw. So there's still, you know, a decent amount of Marines out there. And we have to expand our own security bubble anytime we own a defensive position. So we're still doing our security patrols. And if the ANSAF need us in any capacity, we'll provide some enabling functions for them. So we still do ISR, fires, medevac, CASAVAC, things like that. And we're also doing some small, you know, once in a while, some training to help them here and there with some mortars, perhaps. But we're actually being pretty proactive. So when you're in the hostile environment, and it's still a very dangerous place out here, can't kid yourself, there's still fundamentals of the defense still apply even when you're in a hard position or a FOB.
So it used to be when the Marines are going on patrol with the Afghan local police, you said back 2011, 7,000 patrols a week. Are they still going out like that, or is that cut way back? Or is it more
Marines
than the patrols now?
Do not do patrols with the Afghan local police anymore. They are on their own.
That's, you know, that kind of says it's for security on the spot, doesn't it?
It sure does. And it took us a while to get there. We had to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And that was very hard for the Marines to do because we always want to fix things. We want to do things. We're helpers. and to finally let them go and get them to that point, to let them go on their own, I mean, that's very hard to do. And our Marines have done a great job of letting them go. And the more we've stepped back, the more they've stepped up.
Okay. So there's a group out at 29 Palms called the Advisor Training Group. Do you have any of those Marines with you? And how are they doing?
Well, really, what the way the Advisor Training Group works is all the advisor teams that come out to support us, at least Marine Corps, have to go through there to get certified before they come out here. So all these advisors that are here now are graduates of the Advisor Training Group. You know, so that's how that works. And right now, the officer in charge of the Advisor Training Group is Lieutenant Colonel or Colonel Select Jeff Kenny, who was on our staff out here for 6 months before he went back to be in charge of that. So we certainly have one of our own running that program right now.
Okay. The role of ATG isn't to teach the Marines how to take over from the AMPs or ANAs. It's really a question of teaching them how to mentor the Afghan and then have the Marines step back and have the Afghan do it. That's got to be a major mindset for a Marine officer.
Well, it certainly is. And really, I'm proud about how the Marines have been able to do that, because it's really a mature mindset that you got to have. And really, you got to work yourself out of a job. That's how you got to do it. You build their capacity, and as their capacity grows, you step back. And there's really a sweet spot you got to hit all the time when you realize you got to step back. And that's what they teach at ATG. We're no longer combat advising anymore. And in many cases, as they've grown in capacity and capability, we're sort of monitor, mentor, and report mode to know where those belly buttons are that we need to push to help them along even further. And like I said, as far as their combat or individual shoot, move, and communicate, they're fine. It's just, it's more their admin logistics and things of that nature. And sustaining their NCO corps, like schools over time, it'll take a little while, but I'm really impressed with their progress to this point.
Okay, tremendous. Colonel, I know you're pressed for time. What final words do you have for us about the Marines currently in RCT-7?
Well, we're just really proud to be part of the solution out here. And you've been around it a long time. It's a lot of work up. You prepare for a year deployment, and then when you finally see it come to an end, you got mixed emotions. It's hard for us to let go a little bit, but it's also the right thing to do is to let go. I'm very, very proud of the team that's come together here. And if this is the end of the road for me, who knows? I'll be very proud to say I was the commanding officer of Regimental Combat Team 7, and that I was able to serve with these fine young men that are here with me. I mean, this is some quality Marines and across the board. And I can't help but get a little, melancholy when I start thinking about all the regiments who have gone before, some very close friends of mine, that really set the stage for us to be able to lift off at this point. So we're very proud to be the last regiment out here.
Great. Colonel, thank you. That's tremendous news. This is Leatherneck Magazine's Andrew Lubin. They've been talking with Colonel Lustin Renforth, commanding officer of RCT-7. Sir, hopefully we'll be able to re-engage before you leave. And thank you for the time today.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. It's good to talk to you again. Next time, let's not be 5 years, all right?
Yes, sir. You got that.